Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggly.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Yeah. What it is, it's your man King Eric, the Media Assassin. We are now tuned in to episode 581 of Off the Cuff Radio. We've got the March to 600 going down starting tonight. And this show is sponsored by Screwball Radio, Buddy Boy Entertainment, Da Vinci Clothing. Got my host T-Max with the facts on the line. What's good?
What? Man, what it do, y'all. Another fantastic Friday on that OTC frequency. Shout out to our co-host, Real Life Sandman, Lady Chinchilla. We alive and direct. Of course, shout out to DJ Sincere, Dirty Basin Radio up in New York. And tonight's guest, she is so special. She is so skilled. She is so philosophical. She is the hallmark of perseverance. This woman has mastered the sweet science of pugilism in all aspects. She is a noted boxing trainer, not enthusiast. She's a trainer. She actually is rooted deep in this culture. And she is all about empowerment in terms of showing how, with the sweet science of having them hand skills, you can make it ill. Representing Cincinnati, Ohio, she is the representation of why black girls rock in so many ways, and we are so privileged and so humbled to have her on our show tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Cincy Kid, Miss Maria. Hey, girl, what's going on?
Hey, how are y'all doing? Oh, I love that introduction. That was beautiful. I'm doing well. How are y'all doing?
We are doing good. We're good. Took a while. We finally made it happen. You are all about the portrait of empowerment. Let's get it. You know, tell everybody a little bit about yourself. Welcome.
Well, my name is Maria. Some people know me as Cincy Kid on Instagram. I'm definitely from where boxing lives and breathes. You actually kind of got to know how to fight to be in Cincinnati. I'm just going to say that outside the boxing ring. Let me make that clear. But I always was a fan of boxing because I am from Cincinnati. It's a real boxing town that breeds world champions, and that pedigree cannot be dismissed. But I never thought about doing it when I was younger, just because my mindset was a little different, more survival mode than recreation. But when I got to Atlanta to broaden my horizons, I found boxing and I fell in love with it in a whole nother way. So it's been a journey. It's been a journey, but it's been a really great journey. I've met people from all walks of life, from youth all the way to seniors, and boxing is the silver, is the thing that ties all of it together. So it's been very, very interesting, but I'm happy to be along the journey, and I'm happy to be here with y'all tonight. I appreciate y'all including me in your program.
Man, look, when we do this show, we're so privileged because we get to talk to so many people from so many different walks of life. And you coming from Ohio, you also are from the same place as my brother King would say, one of the greatest black men ever to walk the planet in terms of business, getting everybody money. Because he's from Cleveland while you're from Cincinnati. Oh. We're talking about the one and only Al Haymon.
Yes, sir. Oh, yes. Definitely. I forgot about that. In the Al Haymon has his finger in a lot of pots in boxing and really across, like you said, all business. So Ohio representing yet again.
As long as the home team play, it's the land of the hustlers because, you know, even Don King is from out there. And that's where the money getters come from out there.
Yeah. You definitely need to know, have some type of hustle about yourself, that's for sure. Ohio, yeah. It definitely breeds that out of people. So that's I do remember Don King is from there. He definitely has made his mark and left his mark.
Yeah.
So
I mean, but it's more history. Yeah, I mean, just in terms of sports history, you know, you got, Jim Trestle and Maurice Claret from Youngstown. You know, you have LeBron James from Akron. I mean, you got Ohio State University, Ohio Bobcats. Yeah, I mean, you all.
Yes.
So when you think about it in terms of boxing, what really, really inspired you in terms of when you really knew that this is what you wanted to do? Especially being a woman in a male-dominated field.
What kind of changed my mind about it? It was a couple things. I started out doing it just for fitness, and then I just fell in love with it. That's my own personal side, but probably about 4 or 5 years in, I was chosen to be in a commercial for ESPN. Women, I'm thinking just ESPNW, but it actually ran on the ESPN network for an entire year. But the short movie was about women's empowerment, so that kind of shifted my training into me being a trainer, and I started doing the women's class. But one day I visited another gym, and I saw these old people just kind of shift into the gym, and I was like, okay, what's going on? It was very unusual to see these people, and it was a bunch of them. And I was like, okay. And then I just stuck around and I just watched them. And as soon as they start putting on their boxing gloves and moving, they just came to life, and it intrigued me. So what it was a boxing program for people living with Parkinson's disease. So that really changed me because boxing is the number one thing that they can do to help fight the disease off. It's not like people die from Parkinson's, but it does, it's degenerative, so it does steal their mobility. So they have to keep moving for life. And that really changed me. It really changed me. And then even after that, I found out how I can get, a lot of people know about Rock City Boxing, but I found a local program in Atlanta, and I was able to volunteer and get trained up, and I became an affiliate of them, so I started my own program. So I saw how boxing changes lives, really. I mean, I saw somebody that couldn't stand for longer than a couple minutes running around the ring, so over time. So it really... That really touched me, and it really changed me in another kind of way. I also work with youth boxers, so it's a real journey to see these young people come in and be developed into these fighters and just all around great people. So it's a lot of different ways that, you know, people just know, they know knockouts, they know Floyd Mayweather, they know Mike Tyson, but they don't know that part of boxing. So it's really beautiful to watch people just grow, develop, especially then you got these seniors, people living with Parkinson's disease, that it really, really changes them. So that's what intrigues me, and that's what keeps me in it for the long haul. So people come from fitness, they come, fighters come and go, but that part of it is really what touches my heart, what keeps me grounded, what keeps me going. So it's that beautiful side of boxing, outside of people's teeth getting knocked out, people getting knocked out to the canvas, all that stuff. So that's definitely part of it, but that's not the only part of it.
Well, one thing about it, man, is when we look at it, King is definitely a boxing historian in terms of really watching a lot of the great fights over the years. I've of course always been a fan myself. I mean, when you look at some of the greats like Arturo Gatti, Mickey Ward, you know, Terrence Pryor, Mike Tyson, of course, Roy Jones Jr., Antonio Tarver,
Whitaker.
I mean, Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvin Hagler, Tommy Hearns. I mean, Sweet Pea Whitaker from my hometown of Hampton Roads, Virginia, rest in peace. You know, it's like, the list is endless. What do people have to understand in terms of the sweet science of pugilism? I mean, even going back to the days of Max Schnelling, Jack Johnson, Sugar Ray Robinson, Muhammad Ali, Sugar Ray Robinson, Floyd Patterson, and all of them. I mean, boxing has pretty much been around as we know it for almost over 120 years. What is the real science in terms of having the coordination to have the discipline, hand skills, everything? Please.
I believe that it's something that's in people, like the fight, all those great fighters that you named, it's something that was in them that allowed them to go through the grueling training to become these great fighters and to leave a legacy of pugilism. It's something inside. It's a fighter that's inside people. Some people have it naturally. Some people it can be developed to a point. But, like, to really go through the training and the actual fighting and to get used to getting hit and even getting knocked down and coming back, like, it's something in the spirit of the fighter that I really feel like that can't be taught. That's innate in them. Especially like you mentioned, somebody like Sugar Ray Robinson, he had over 200 fights, and he didn't lose until after 100 and something fights, and still the greatest to ever lace up a pair of gloves. So it was something in him. I mean, you know, towards later, the latter part of the career, it could be money, it could be anything, but to initially pick up gloves, and it's not an easy role. It's a lot of great fighters, but a lot of them don't make it to the level of being a prize fighter, you know? So it's a lot of things that have to line up for that to happen, but it's something that initially is in the inside of that fighter that will, if they're disciplined and they can withstand the grueling training and the early mornings and the late nights, and you might have to work and you might have a family, if they can and manage all that, if they can withstand that, then the sky is really the limit. So it's really in you already. Like, the person comes into the gym with this thing that's in them. So people like me, you know, my partner, we just help develop it. So either you a fighter or you might not be. So it's definitely something that has been placed in you before you even come into the gym, because it takes a lot to get to those levels of all those great fighters that you name. Definitely not an easy role. Like I said, I mentioned Mayweather because he's such a modern known fighter that everybody knows. Everybody see the money. Everybody see him. But he started when he was probably a baby. You know what I'm saying? Like he came from a family of boxers. So it takes
also
that
his dad.
Long. Yes, it takes that long to develop to the level of somebody like Floyd Mayweather. So it's not an easy path for anybody, and it's hard on the coaches too. So it's everybody, somebody like Floyd Mayweather is an anomaly nowadays. You know what I mean? So he was able to reach those high levels with money, and he's still, even to this day, even as a retired fighter, he's still in there training. Something that's in him that won't that won't let him stop. You know what I'm saying? That even when he got to the money, he still kept training. He still kept doing what he needed to do. He still kept beating these guys. So it's something that's really in the person already. That your God, or you know what I'm saying, the Most High God has placed inside of you. So you got to be a fighter already, because it takes a lot. It takes a lot. It takes a lot of dedication, a lot of determination to do it. It's not everybody's not built for it in that way. So, you know, but you can still have fun and do it for fitness. You can still have fun and you know, get a skill set of, like you said, hands and feet, and you know, so but to get to those levels, those heights of boxing, it takes a lot, and it takes something that's already just in you, the drive and the determination, ambition. So lots of things have to line up, but if you want it, you can have it. So
yeah,
you got to be willing to work really, 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 really hard for it.
That's true. And see, the thing about it, Cincy, is when everybody looks at Mayweather, you know, and we love Mayweather, we always have a running joke, but we're so serious about being a money team representative because we got nothing but love for Heyman and Floyd. And one thing about it with Floyd,
yeah,
in terms of what he has done, what he was able to do was, of course, 1996, when that was his last fight as an amateur, and that was the last fight he got lost. Mind we all say he got robbed in that fight.
He got robbed.
We all know he got robbed in that fight. But that was the catalyst that would propel him years later to where, you know, he's the PD, you know, the TBE, the best ever, 53-0, you know,
yeah.
I mean,
and
also too, he has his act of Money Mayweather, you know, because, you know, he's figured out how to monetize it, but I've seen that man train.
Yes.
And I tell anybody, it ain't no bullshit when he gets them gloves off, figuratively speaking, and he's in that gym preparing. It is not a game.
Definitely.
To watch that man train. He is serious. And in terms,
yeah,
of statistics, you know, his CompuBox numbers have, you know, rated historically, he is the least hit fighter in the history of boxing.
Mm-hmm.
His defensive prowess is unparalleled. I have never seen a fighter dip and dodge the way that he has in terms of not getting hit. We've always joked fighting him would be easy because Mayweather is not a guy who's going to go for the knockout. Doesn't mean he won't lay you,
yeah,
on the ass if he don't got it. But the thing is, his fighting style is very fundamental. He is a guy who is not going. And he said it himself. He doesn't want to be like those guys like Muhammad Ali and all those other guys,
yeah,
who really, number one, stayed in the game too long, and number two, took a lot of punishment,
yeah,
in terms of hits. You know,
definitely.
You know, I mean, we think about the fights Muhammad Ali had with Sonny Liston, of course, with George Foreman, you know, and even staying on too long. We think about what happened with Bernard Hopkins, you know, as great as he was, executioner. I mean, the last fight he had, we saw him get knocked out the ring.
He got knocked out of that ring right up out of it.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, but Mayweather figured it out in terms of his boxing style. He is a fundamental fighter. He knows how to pick his spots. He's going to win all points. He's not going for the kill shot. He's very strategic. Now, when we compare his fights, like what he had with Sugar Shane Mosley, to what we saw with the three, you know, the trilogy of Arturo Gatti and Mickey Ward, God, it was entertaining to watch. We were like, some of them punches was hurting me watching the fight. I was like, whoa.
Yeah. Not to mention, it took some years off of both of their lives as just human beings. Like, they really went to war. That's one of the greatest trilogies, you know, in boxing history. So, yeah.
Yeah.
They definitely, yeah, but Mayweather definitely figured it out to come out of boxing and still have his faculties and still have his money, you know, and still be able to teach the next generation. Lots of fighters don't. Like you said, they stay in too long. They take too much punishments. You know, Muhammad Ali definitely, like you mentioned, is one of those fighters that just stayed in too long, and that could have brought about his Parkinson's disease. But a lot of them are punch drunk when they speak, and
right. The slurred speech, all
so
that.
So somebody
right.
like a Pernell Whitaker, who was a defensive master, yes, you definitely want to. The game is to hit without getting hit, so you definitely right. should want to not. They get hit the least, like that statistic for Mayweather. And a lot of people see what he did as, oh, he running, he on his bike, but he still has his faculties, and he still could beat the majority of the population. Trust me when I say that. So
right.
he did something right. And for somebody like me and other people that just enjoy the sweet science, what Mayweather did and what he still, you know, he still fights exhibition fights. It's beautiful. It's poetry in motion, you know. So I don't have a problem with nothing that Mayweather did in the ring, and you know, and fighters that are defensively conscious, because you wanna have some type of quality of life after your career is over. And yeah. Taking too much punishment and not being able to speak—that's not what you want. So I definitely respect those guys like that are conscious of what my life would be after boxing, because it's a short window. You don't want to stay in it too long. Like Bernard Hopkins, Joe Louis got knocked out the ring his last fight too. You know, you don't want to. You know, Roy Jones, he stayed in it a little too long too. You know, but. It's your brain is getting knocked around. Your brain, I'm
a lot of guys,
but you know, every time
you're right.
Yeah, a lot of guys. I'm sorry.
A lot of guys stay. Yeah, I would say a lot of guys stay in the game because they get a lot of that money early, but then they don't understand the business side. They get that. I'm talking about like the way Tyson was living. Tyson was making like what? He signed one of the richest. Gator was in boxing history. He had like a 110 mil fight when he came back home from prison, but he had to win all 10 of them to get the money.
Yep.
You know,
and he was super young when he did all those things. So that
was
20 too.
20. You know, for those that do not understand the historical dominance and greatness of Mike Tyson, was 20 years old when he cleaned out his division. 20 years old. He's not even 21. He's not even legal enough to drink. And by the time he was 20 years old, he had cleaned out the whole division. He had beat Spinks. He had beat all of those guys and won the undisputed heavyweight title. He beat every Trevor Burbick, all those guys. He knocked, he, you know, once again, y'all, 20 years old. And he's beating grown men who are like 5-10 years in, and he cleaned out the whole division at 20 years old.
And a 20-year-old man hasn't come into his man strength yet either. So,
and that's
an amazing feat for that guy. Mm-hmm.
And that is what makes Mike such a legendary figure. When we look at it strictly off of Boxing Academia, his gift is something in the heavyweight division that we have not seen since. He, you know, rest in peace, Custom Auto, for what he did to really hone it, because he really saw something in Mike and really, really nurtured it. And it's a shame, you know, not Cuss lived, to, I believe, to see him get the title, but, you know, Cuss passed. And anybody wants to correct me whether he was alive or gone by the time Mike won the title. But that was Custer's whole vision, that Mike would eventually win the title, and he did. But like anything, Mike was a – and like, you know, my brother King was saying, when you look at that lifestyle in terms of what a lot of these young fighters get into, and mind you, you know, y'all, this is in the 80s where boxing is still big. What King said about what he what he was making, and when he got back and when he got out of prison, you know, and he got that, you know, $110 million deal. King, how much was Mike making during those fights in the 80s when he was fighting, when he really hit the big time?
Man, I'd probably say around the 30 mil mark.
Yeah.
I can't think off the head right now, but it was definitely around that range because that's when he started becoming a cultural phenomenon. A year he was doing the Pepsi commercials. He was doing the Pepsi commercials.
I mean, had the video games.
But people don't understand how much a phenomenon he was.
I think Mike Tyson can still beat most guys out here too.
That man is 55 years old, and I watched a training video. King saw it too. We watched a training video of him like 2-3 years ago. That dude is still rock solid. That dude is still throwing them hands like lightning. We were like, we do not want to smoke him. We do not want to smoke with that guy.
No.
Kid Dynamite was serious. And now, for those that don't know, that's what his nickname was, Kid Dynamite. I mean, but Kid Dynamite was something. I mean, he won the fight off of intimidation back in the day when he would come to the ring before he even got in the ring because they already knew what was coming.
Yeah.
And as much as we saw his knockout power and his full strength, we never saw Mike's boxing ability. Not saying he couldn't, but we just never saw the full encompassment of what his ability really was because his that right hook was so strong. I mean, he put you down with it, so we never saw it.
Yeah, during his boxing career, he made about $375
million. And mind y'all, this is 80s and 90s
and
money, y'all.
That was a fraction of what he really earned. You know what I'm saying? Like, he really got – Don King ripped him off, so that was a fraction of what he really earned as a fighter, as a prize fighter. So, amazing, amazing fighter. And like I said previously, it was something that was in him. I mean, it was the way he was raised that he was able to channel that. Then he had, you know, the great Custer Motto come and take him in as a son and develop him and treat him and expose him to family life and make sure he stayed on the straight and narrow. So it was all those other things lining up for him to become the youngest heavyweight champion. So just an amazing, and he was able to captivate the casuals with all those knockouts. I mean, I remember Mike Tyson just doing his thing. And like you said, just beating people on intimidation before he even got into the ring with the no socks, with the towel on, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, the way he moved, it's amazing. It's beautiful. Yeah.
He had that Brooklyn neck twitch too.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. You got to have a neck twitch.
Was terrified. Like, we've seen grown men literally
to go with the right
Mike to walk to the ring.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Just. And you said that we haven't seen that, and we really haven't. We really haven't since Mike Tyson that was able to capture the casual fans as well as like the real boxing, you know, enthusiasts. So we haven't seen that in America. You know, Deontay Wilder, he definitely had the knockout power, but it still wasn't the same level as the great Mike Tyson, Iron Mike Tyson. You know, so like you said, Kid Dynamite. So it's just something. It's kind of like lightning in a bottle. Trying to capture that, you know. So, Sugar Ray Leonard, all of those guys, Marvin Hagler, you know, those were just special individuals that just had something, that something in them that just made them rise up, you know, to the top. And people gotta go back and watch those fights because it's just like I said, it's poetry in motion. It ain't no other way to describe it. There's poetry and emotions. There's all these things lining up for these guys to come out here and just display their skill set. You know, so it's a lot to it, though, you know. But they have mastered it and, you know, reached the highest levels of it. So it's just beautiful.
Yeah, man. And when you look at it, how important is it? Because we, you know, we cover so many aspects of the industry, but it all comes back to the same. It all comes down to the money. How important is it to have the right people in your business in terms of making sure that your money is taken care of? Because a lot of people don't understand. Shout out to the old man. We affectionately call him Jay Prince, that he wrote in his book, The Art of Science. Y'all pick that up if y'all haven't. And because he's an avid boxing fan as well. And he wrote about how, you know, when he was involved in boxing years back, about the purses that these fighters get. And he was saying that everybody thinks that these fighters are just getting money just to get it. And he's like, no, people don't understand. When you get those millions of dollars, that goes for your training. That goes for your staff.
Yeah.
That goes for your whole boxing or operation. That money is spread around because you're talking about people who this is their full-time job to help you get to where you're trying to go.
Absolutely. It's imperative that you have the right people around you to even get to the level where you are making millions of dollars in boxing. I know a lot of really great, talented fighters that don't get off of the ground. You know what I'm saying? They may start out, and you know, when you start out your professional boxing career, they're not making a lot of money. They start out making hundreds of dollars, start making thousands of dollars, you know, and they may still have to work. They may have sponsorship. They may not. You know what I'm saying? So it takes a lot to get to the money, and if you don't have the right people behind you, it can end before it actually takes off, and also you can get to that level and people rob you blind, you know, so you got to have a team that you can trust. A lot of the guys that are really good prize fighter, they have been probably training with their father most of their lives, or their father might be like the head coach or the second coach or something like that. So it's imperative that you have the right people around you. Otherwise, you can be the best local fighter ever and nobody knows about you. You know, so you have to have a team that you can trust. You have to have a team that got your best interest at heart, because this is sacrifice for the coaches and the staff as well. And but the reward is handsome if you stay with it, if you stick to it, and all those other things will line up for you. So it's a tough road. It's a tough road.
Yeah, when you see the new generation, like guys like Shakur Stevenson and Tank Davis, Javante Davis, what do you see with those guys in terms of what they're bringing for that next generation?
They are all great fighters. The sky is the limit. I feel like they all need to fight each other. You can only be the best by fighting the best. So if I beat 30, you know, average fighters, I don't want to call nobody a tomato can or a cab driver, nothing like that, because they sacrifice and they going through a lot too. You know, but some guys are going to be just journeymen. And so I would love to see them mix it up more amongst each other, like the top guys in those divisions, just fight each other. You know what I'm saying? Just fight each other. You know, Tank, I feel like he hasn't really been tested yet, you know, with somebody that really, really matches his skill set. He is a great fighter, and he has potential to be even greater if he fights the best guys in his division. But Shakur Stevenson has the pedigree to be among the great and to be a Hall of Famer if that's what he aspires to do. I saw him fight live one time, and I couldn't get over how sharp his jab was. And it was just kind of like, it just took me back, like, whoa. So he definitely has that thing that I'm talking about. Shakur has it. Tank has it too. All of these guys have a lot of potential. Me personally, I would like to see them fight each other, take the risk. It, just because you lost, it doesn't mean that you're not a great fighter. The best fighters have lost, and that's part of the story is you lose, you become human to people, and then you come back and you win, and you're the king of the hill again. So it's nothing wrong with losing. You fight, you might lose, you come back, you fight another day. So that builds character in people, and you won't win everything. Like I said, Mayweather going 53-0, that's rare. You know what I mean? That's rare. So the sky's the limit for these young contenders and world champions. I would like to see them fight each other more often, though. Just like how Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvin Hagler, Roberto Duran, Tommy Hearns, they fought each other often. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They fought each other. And, yeah, somebody got to lose, but it's, you know, you still win. You're still a winner. You're still a winner. So I feel like they definitely need to take a little more risk nowadays because, you know, the pedigree is there for them to be among the greats if they want to be. But if you avoid it and you don't fight the best, it won't be like that.
And we've seen situations where some fighters who shall remain nameless, people have said that they haven't always taken the challenges when the people were at their best. You know, we look at a situation, like you said, going back to Deontay Wilder, you know, Deontay was always, that right hook, that punch was always strong. But when he fought Fury, you know, Tyson Fury was steadfast. And he said, I'm a better boxer than he is. And as much as we love Deontay, we found out he can punch, but he didn't have the fundamentals down. Mm-hmm. And when Floyd Mayweather offered to give him lessons in terms of bettering his defense and boxing technique, and Deontay didn't take it, I was bugging. I'm like, the legend, the master has offered his services to you. And I just couldn't understand why Deontay didn't take that opportunity.
It's a lot of ego. I feel like he was used to what he was used to. Him having that, you know, he fell in love with his power. And but, you know, when you go to war, you want to have more than one weapon. He had one good weapon, and it did the job for so long. But once somebody met him with the same skill set and even better, Fury was able to neutralize that one weapon that he had. Yeah, he got knocked down. He still got back up and beat him though. So you have to have more than one tool in your toolbox when you go to war. Like I said, we go back to the 80s. Those guys had great footwork. They had power. The defense was good. So they had an all-around skill set versus just having one great punch. Because you always got a puncher's chance, especially heavyweights, because one punch can change the whole fight.
That's true.
With guys that are, you know, 250 pounds, 6'7", 6'8", those are huge guys. So, yeah, if they hit you on the button, yeah, you're going to go down, you know. So, but when somebody came in there with skills, even though he looked like he looked, but he moved like he moves, and he was able to beat him. And that's just a lesson in just being humble and just staying the student of the sweet science. And when a master offers his services, no, you humble yourself and you take it and you become better. I still think that it's safe for Deontay Wilder out there. I hope he does become a better skilled fighter, because I mean I like him, and he it's still opportunity out there for him if he wants it. So but you got to, you know, you got to still humble yourself and still be willing to go back to the basics and drill the jab if that's what you got to do all day in the gym. You know what I'm saying? and work on footwork and, you know, just basics, the basics. So, but when somebody steal your best weapon, it's your mind. It's in your mind to another play.
You know, yeah, Fury took that punch from him and went down, but he got back up. Yeah.
Oh, man. Did you see his face when he got back up?
Yeah, he was like
Deontay's face when he got back up. That's what that is. Like, oh my goodness, he took my best shot, and the man got up off the canvas, and he came back and fought his tail off. So, but it's a lesson in ego, of course. With the male domination in boxing, it's a lot of testosterone. It's a lot of ego going on. But the most humble fighters are the best fighters.
Yeah, I know what Anthony Joshua, there had been a lot, you know, Joshua was a dude who had that run for a minute, you know, where he was doing his thing, of course, you know, but he, you know, lost his fight, and, you know, some people even accusing Joshua at one point that he was kind of ducking a few people, you know, in terms of he wasn't trying to go to that next level in terms of some of the big guys out there, you know. You know, when you look at some of the guys.
Yeah, I think you know, a lot of people complain about is a lot of times you get robbed of the best fights. And then when the fights finally happen, it's like the fighters are pretty much older or they're past their prime. And slowly but surely you start seeing momentum start shifting to, you know, the UFC because at that one particular time. But now we're starting to see things shift back to boxing, but, you know, there's still what a lot of critics are saying, a lot of complaints there. There's still fights are taking too long to happen. Just like even with the Spence and Crawford fight, it should have happened 3 years ago.
Right. Man. Yeah, I mean.
Spence would have had a better chance if it would have happened 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. He would have had a much better chance with Crawford, but they
car crashes. You know, them car crashes he had, ain't
and
you?
And the car
you know
crashes, yeah.
I mean, you know, but that's what Dana White. Yeah, but that's what Dana White was saying, because Dana White has been a critiquer, has been a criticizer of the boxing of the past few years, where, you know, he says, you know, when the fights were announced, he's like, once again, you know, when the UFC, he's like, once again, we give you the fights that boxing doesn't, because UFC has a standing rule that the champion has 90 days to defend their title or they're stripped of it, you know. Or when the fight is made, that they have to fight. There's no ducking it. Like, you know, you have to fight the contenders in it. You know, there's no running away from it.
And that's why they lose a lot. They lose a lot more because of that. You know, they are fighting the best. You fight the best, guess what? You might lose. There's a good chance you might lose. You know what I'm saying? So you come back. And you go to the drawing board and you come back and fight again. So that's why they have a lot more losses on their records as fighters in the UFC and MMA and things like that because of them mandating stuff like that 90-day rule, and you have to fight the next guy in line. You can't skip over. So that's why they lose a lot more often. But if you're able to avoid it, sometimes people do.
Yeah.
And they robbed the fans.
Right.
I was about to say, they robbed the fans of great fights, you know?
Yeah. You know, when we think about it, when we look at how the UFC is set up, you know, in terms of it, it's so much in terms of watching a lot of those guys cross over. Like, we saw Conor McGregor and Mayweather get it on recently. We saw Ngannou. Mm-hmm. And Fury get it in, and we know Ngannou won. I mean, that was not. I mean, Ngannou was
good fight
with his hands. Period. I mean, they just couldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm like, look, just get that man his victory, because I'm like, I know this isn't a quote unquote boxing match in terms of like a real fight, but I'm like, that man beat Fury. I'm like, did that? I mean,
There's an old saying, y'all. There's money in the rematch.
That's true.
That's
true.
There's money in the rematch.
And a lot of
that's
people
exactly
don't know
they're doing.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't know Ngannou started out as a boxer, and then he went to the UFC. So he did his thing. I was impressed. And if he wanted to stick around in boxing, he definitely could mix it up with those heavyweights on the top level, on the high level. So he did his thing. And, you know, depending on how you saw it, if he won or not, but he definitely went out there and put on a show and of course, his money in the rematch. So hopefully they mix it up again at some point, you know, before Fury retires on everybody.
Yeah, I mean, but you look at all But, I mean, and that's always been the question about who's going to be the next great heavyweight, because for the past 15 years, we've seen the Klitschko brothers. You know, we've seen Fury. We've seen Joshua. We've seen a lot of these guys from overseas. And there have been questions about, you know, who's going to be the next homegrown heavyweight that really, really, you know, does it for America. Where do you think, Cincy, that the interest in boxing in the United States, where being the undisputed world champion, everything really meant something, that now for some kids, that's not their aspiration to do it anymore?
I think making a lot of money early on can spoil those types of aspirations, where it's more about the money than the legacy. It's something too, to grind and just humbling yourself and just continuing just to put your head down and work. So when it happens really quickly, it can spoil the fighter to start picking and choosing. And you know, that's their prerogative, but it does take something away from their legacy in the end, because they're not fighting. They're not necessarily fighting the best, the top guys. Because some guys are high risk but low reward. And, you know, those guys are typically avoided. And so it's interesting now, because they are mixing in like YouTubers fighting and MMA fighting. So Fury and Ngannou, they made a lot of money that night, and I feel like Ngannou put up a more of a fight than what Fury was expecting, but they still both made a lot of money. And so will Fury come back and fight for the heavy, you know, undisputed with Usyk? We'll see. But you know, it was a money grab for them in a kind of way. So it's tough, because it's a lot of money to be made, but that also can spoil the legacy in the long run for fighters if that's their only focus. You know what I mean? So it's hard to say. It can, the tide can turn back to that. It just has to be somebody, you know, that is just about a legacy, and some hell or high water, that's what they want. And you know, the money will be a byproduct of that, you know what I mean? So it don't necessarily have to be the focus. It'll come to you if you just, you know, keep your head down and you fight the best. It'll come. So it can go back to that. It definitely can go back to that. And I don't feel like boxing will, you know, people, I hear people say boxing is dead and the UFC taking over. I don't believe that. It's been around for a very long time. It will continue to be around, because I see the 5-year-old that came into the gym, you know, they can't start fighting until they're 8 years old. And I see these young people that still have that burning desire to not necessarily go to the Olympics. That definitely has changed, but just the fight, like they the fight is in them. And it's definitely, I feel like boxing ain't going nowhere, and it's the next great heavyweight or the next great American world champion, you know, or, you know, like you said, the heavyweight is such a glamorous division. He in the gym right now somewhere, or he in the mirror somewhere shadow boxing, you know, in his free time and not on the phone scrolling. So, you know, it's they out there, but those things have to align up for them so that they can get in front of the right people and have the right fights and get to the money. So they're it's somewhere in the gym. Yeah.
Perfect segue, Cincy, because you talked about being on the phone and you talked about social media and everything. So another dude that just happens to be from Ohio, Cleveland specifically, the Paul brothers. You know, what do you feel about some of these people that are now, we all say this in all fairness, because the Paul brothers are not boxers in the traditional sense, but they have trained. albeit they did not go through the regular procedure, the protocol of how a lot of the normal boxers do. But we've seen them fight doing these, and they've made a lot of money doing it. What do people have to understand about having the proper training to get in the ring? Because the referee always says, protect yourself at all times. And what are the legal implications in terms of having your hands once you – how does that process go in terms of having your hands registered as dangerous weapons once you've gone through that training? How does that work? And in terms of how people get involved into it to where they are recognized legitimately as trained fighters?
It's definitely the dedication that's put into it to acquire that skill set to get to the point where you need to have your hands registered. You mentioned Jake, you know, the Powell brothers. Yeah, they fell in love with boxing, and they, you know, especially Jake Paul more than Logan, but once again, it's you have those guys that have been boxing since they've been, you know, 5 years old or even younger, you know, depending on, you know, who's been around them. So, Jake, you know, it's just a lot of dedication that to get to the point where you have to be registered or have your hands registered. And those guys that are on that level, like, it's a humble, like, I keep going back to this humbleness. It's a humbleness about them. Like, they're not going out here just knocking people out because they know what they can really do out here in the street. So it's not a street fight for them. It's not, you know, this is their life and their livelihood. So a lot of things depend on that. So to get to the point where you need to be registered is it's major. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, the most humble guys that I've met in boxing, they all have been gentlemen. It's a gentleman sport, and they just exude that in the ring and out. So to get to the point of registration, you one bad man or woman, you know. So it just takes a lot of hard work and determination to do it.
And speaking of women, because you also come from a lineage in terms of women who have been in the game, such as, you know, Ann Wolf, the legendary trainer, of course, Christy Martin, of course, you know, who can forget, you know, this legend who made her own, and she's the daughter of a legend. I think you heard of her, Leila Ali.
Yes, I have heard of her.
What was it like for them in terms of their contributions and paving the way for what you would end up, you know, doing and showing that? Because it's like this, because I want to say this very carefully, because we love our ladies out there of all walks of life, of all colors, all nationalities. And I've seen girls throw hands, and I've seen some girls that have got hands like dudes. But I will also say this by the same token. When we get into the gender equality, I do not want to see a woman fighting a man in the ring, period. No.
Me either.
Second, just like I don't want to see women trying to play football at that level, not because they cannot play, not because they don't know the game, because football and boxing are dangerous for men. And it is way more dangerous for women to go against men in there. It's dangerous for women fighting each other like that. You know, but what does that show in terms of women showing their mettle and the ability and the fact that they can accomplish something just as substantial as the men can in their profession, that it's not just exclusively for men?
It's definitely been a lot of progress in women's boxing. It's hard for women, but women, in my experience, women are some of the most easy to train for some reason. But because of a lot of the, you know, the social constructs and just society in general, a lot of people don't want to see women get in there and fight. They only want to see them get in and fight each other. But I agree with you on women fighting men. I don't ever want to see that. Men are naturally stronger. It's no disputing that. I know Carissa Shield called out K- Keith Thurman recently, but she put him in a lose-lose situation. If he went out there and beat her up, he's a bad guy. If he go out there and he get beat up, oh man, he's soft.
And,
so it's winning in that.
And Keith was trying to
If y'all gonna do something, call Vince McMahon to do that. Put that on WWE or something. Make his money.
Yeah, like a novelty type of thing. Yeah. I don't want to see it. Me personally, I don't want to see no woman go up against no man. Like you said, men are just naturally stronger, and when you are training as a woman, yeah, you're gonna spar men. You know, it's nothing for Carissa to get in there and women like Carissa to spar men. She's sparring men all the time. But when they get to a certain level, world-class level, it's different. You know what I mean? It's totally different. So I take my hats off to them. Women's boxing is definitely changing. It's a long way to go as far as equality, as far as, like, what they get paid. But it is changing slowly but surely. And I think a lot of it, just if people can just look at them fight and not just see, like, women and just see two fighters in the ring, they can appreciate what they're doing. And I think another factor is that it's not a lot of knockouts. You know, knockouts attract casual people, you know, casual fans
right.
that might not appreciate certain things about the sweet science. So I feel like if it was more than that, but for them to have more of that, they got to fight 3-minute rounds. They only fighting 2-minute rounds. So those little nuanced things have to change, and they may change in the future. But it's definitely a huge place for women's boxing, and I feel like they're some of the best fighters. They really are. Like I said, if you can just get past a pretty face or whatever you're seeing, you know, and just appreciate them as fighters, people will see it more as just a good fight versus, oh, it's just women's fight. Because women really didn't start amateur fighting or Olympic fighting until 1992, like the last 30 or so years. They was professionals.
Right.
You know, you had Christy Martin and those women, those great women that blazed that path, but they weren't fighting in the Olympics until 30 years ago. Just think about how long boxing been around. And the last 30 years, they've been able to pursue a gold medal. And Carissa went out there and got two of them. So it's something special in that. I think as people's minds change about women in general, it'll become even bigger. But, you know, they out there doing their thing, and it's going to change. It's going to be different for the 7-year-old little girl that's in the gym training right now. You know, by the time she gets to those levels, it'll be different for her. And all those other little girls that are out there trying to sell. But I feel like women are some of the best fighters, and I might be biased, but hey.
It's all good. I mean, you got the skills no matter who you are. You know, I mean, it's just like with the WNBA.
No, that's true.
You know, I mean, you got a lot of those women who are, you know, and I do not know how true this is, but I've heard in passing, rest in peace, Kobe and Gigi. I heard that Kobe was trying to train Gigi up to be the first woman to play in the NBA. Yes, that's just what I heard. I do not know how true it was, but I've heard that in passing, you know, that he wanted her to be the first woman to play in the NBA. Now, we've seen some girls, you know, like Caitlin Clark, you know, from Iowa. I mean, you know, Aja Wilson, of course, she's in the league. I mean, you know, Angel Reese doing her thing, you know, Flajay, out at LSU. I mean, them girls is just, I mean, balling-wise, they are serious. You know, you look at Cheryl Miller, you know, who was arguably the greatest woman player ever, you know, and what she was doing, you know, back in the 80s, dominating. And, you know, there's all, but it's once again, you're dealing with a situation of a game where you're dealing with guys who are big and strong. And while a lot of women are agile, can move, and can shoot, you know, you get down the low post and you are against a 7-footer who's 280 pounds. And, you know, that's a mismatch.
That's a mismatch. It's definitely a mismatch, you know. I don't necessarily want to see those things. I think women should stick with women's sports and you know, and vice versa. Men, like I said, men just naturally are stronger and bigger. And it's not to say, not to take anything away from these women athletes. It's just biology. You know what I mean? It's just biological. So I don't want to see I don't know about a woman in the NBA. I definitely don't want to see a woman fighting no man on no world class level. Like, that's my personal opinion about it.
Yeah. Now,
but women, they definitely are great athletes.
Now, when you think about it now, when we get back to boxing in terms of how the fights are set up, you know, we have the IBF, the WBC, but there's always been the issue of boxing because there has never been one singular governing body that sanctions, you know, the overseeing. And, you know, we're not naive to it. We know that boxing is great as it's been at certain levels. It's also been historically corrupt sport at certain levels. How do you feel in terms of
that are in? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last part.
Well, how do you feel about it in terms of the shadowy figures that have been involved in it, where some would say erode the integrity of because it has been a corrupt business at times?
You definitely correct about it being shady figures in the background, and you know the mafia controlled boxing for a very long time. I would love to see it be more regulated because boxers retire and they don't have a pension and they don't have certain things in place for them as they, you know, go into life after boxing. And you see a lot of great fighters that are struggling on a daily basis, don't even have health care. So it's definitely a lot of grimy and slimy and shady people behind the scenes in boxing. I don't know necessarily how that could change. I do think it would be good to have like more regulation, like you said, one regulatory body, and also like setting these fighters up to have something after their career is over. You know, because it's sad to see these great fighters that are, like, literally scraping by. You know what I'm saying? And they had all this glory at one point in time, but now it's like people don't even – they basically are nothing. So I don't know what it is about it that has attracted those types of shady figures in the past but currently, but it is part of boxing. And more transparency, more insight, you know, would definitely help in that aspect of it.
Yeah, I think people need to find out, and this is another thing I want to pitch in too, that people be thinking when they look at these movies like Rocky and shit, they be thinking boxing is just like that. Like you, but it's really nothing like that. Like, you know, you come in the way he would fight, just walk in there, don't hold his gloves up, just get his head beat in, and you turn the guy out and win the fight. That's not going to work at all in a real life fight.
No.
You'll be out of here. Absolutely. You'll be out of here, and you'll be out of here within two rounds if you keep playing with that.
Yeah. And yeah, even the Creed movie, like how the last Creed movie, the guy came in and he just went in and got a world champion fight. That is not realistic by any stretch of the imagination.
It's funny because when we saw Rocky III, it's funny because when we saw Rocky III, Shaw's of Mr. T, you know that's how you know, but that's how it was going. I mean, when he was actually knocking out all the contenders, and they were you seeing the newspaper headlines and opening montage. I had a Tiger montage where, they're saying Clubber Lang, you know, KO. Now he's ranked D. Now they were saying like Clubber Lang is now number one contender. It's like that's how it really works. You got to take out everybody, you know. And,
yeah.
I mean,
champ gonna pick some fighter. That's what gets me too about. This is one thing I say. You know, I got to say this because, you know, we off the cuff on it. Let's be real for a second. They couldn't find a real marketable white world champion, so they had to create one. And that was what Sylvester Stallone was. They couldn't beat Muhammad Ali. They couldn't finally beat Muhammad Ali, so they figured, yo, we need to go here and create. Even let's make it fictional as possible.
And apparently the Rocky character was based off of a fighter named Chuck Webner.
Chuck Webner. Chuck Webner. Yeah, he was a dude that fought Ali, as a matter of fact, years back. Chuck Webner, he actually sued Sylvester Stallone because he was saying that Stallone stole his life in terms of the writing for the Rocky movie. You know, but
I recently went back and watched all that the Rocky movies, and it's just a great story. It's just a great story. It's definitely not realistic, but it's just a great story. It's just he lost and he came back and he, you know, dug it up out the mud, and it's just a great story. But
it's not
realistic. Yeah,
it's a great inspirational story in terms of overcoming triumph and maintaining your confidence. But when it comes to the fight scenes, you niggas better not train like that.
No.
These dudes would knock your head off and come up there like the way Sylvester Stallone was fighting.
And it's crazy because the Rocky
Stallone charging against Wilder like that. He imagines Sylvester Stallone charging against Wilder like that. Yo, his head be flying in the fourth row.
He'll be in the hospital. Come on. Yes.
And you know they had to further the plot, too, going in the 80s with the Cold War, still with the United States and the Soviet Union, because this is 1986, 87, when Rocky IV comes out, where he's, you know, and then I'm like, there's a whole bunch of stuff that I'm seeing, because I'm too young, I'm like 9 years old at the time, so I'm not really understanding, like, with Drago, with his training, that I'm not knowing that those needles, you know, were steroids. And I'm like, wait a minute. So he was fighting, and they weren't even training for steroids? I'm like, what?
Oh yeah.
Yo, man.
And he took out Apollo. He took out Apollo too. So
Apollo.
He had to come back and get him.
Killed the black man.
Oh man.
Oh my, really? He
and
really
Apollo Creed was based off of. But it's a great series of. It's a great story. It's an inspirational story for sure.
It is.
But,
and the thing about it with Rocky, y'all, is, I mean, Rocky went through the real life struggles. I mean, Rocky V, that's, you know, because it showed a lot. One thing about, and shout out to Sylvester Stallone, no matter what anybody says about him, he is one of the most iconic actors of our generation, one of the greatest to ever do it, from all aspects of action to drama. And Rocky V told a real story, because what happens, Adrian's brother done fucked around and lost all the money. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's like, you know, so Rocky and Adrian got to go back to the hood because they ain't got no more money. And then you see Rocky back from that fight with Drago, because this is a continued, because, you know, from 1987, of course, Rocky V came out in 91. But you figure it's a continuation in that universe, because Rocky comes back and, you know, you can see he's got that onset of, you know, kind of that Parkinson's. Because, you know, you see the shake, you know, you see the shaking and all that, because Drago gave him some hits. So it's like, this is what Rocky says, you know, this is my last fight and everything. And then Adrian Brother messed around and lose the money. So then Rocky got to get back in the ring again. I mean,
and Rocky talked,
you know,
hell.
This is,
Rocky
this
talked hell anyway, man. Like, you don't let your drunk white brother handle your taxes. Like, what's wrong with you, homie?
That's true, too. That's true. Trusting the wrong people, or the people that's not qualified.
I bet he pocketed some of that. I bet he pocketed some of it too.
Oh yeah.
So I would have whooped Paulie's ass.
Yeah. Paulie was out of pocket. Paulie definitely was out of pocket.
Man. He was like.
But
had me going back to the hood and had my wife going. She went from having me first to going back to that pawn shop, and I whooped Paulie's ass for that. Straight up, man.
Yeah, he deserved it. He would have deserved that ass whooping for sure. For sure.
And I'm like,
yeah.
but it's crazy because when we saw that, but I think, you know, and I know him and Carl Weathers. I know Sylvester Stallone and Carl Weathers, you know, kind of had their falling out. But, you know, one thing about it for Rock, you know, for Sylvester Stallone to take it to the Creed, shout out to Michael B.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan to see him come in and, you know, take that
mm-hmm.
reign and not only take it, but just run with it and an excellent job. I mean, to see that continuation of it, it's a celebration of showing one of the most beloved franchise in movie history extending itself to the next generation.
Definitely.
And sometimes, you know, when we watch movies, y'all, we see some of those sequels that they end up running out of gas. You know, it's like the Friday
mm-hmm.
the 13th. I mean, some of that just got ridiculous at the end. You know, Fast and Furious.
Yeah,
you know, some of that was like improbable.
Yeah.
But the Rocky series with going into Creed, it like really, really took it to the next level. I mean, it really made a great storyline. Like the first one, it's about, you know, Adonis getting into the game and making his way up. The second one is when it comes
mm-hmm.
full circle, when he fights Drago's son.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one where he fights
mm-hmm.
his former best friend.
Ooh.
I mean...
And it can continue. It can continue on. It can definitely continue on. There's so many stories to tell. And in the first one, you got to see what Rocky was up to in modern day, you know, time. So that was beautiful to see. But, you know, people love Rocky, so it was good to see him. What he was good had going on in the here and now, you know. So they definitely continue on telling stories.
It was wild, though, y'all. I was thinking Rocky and Drago was going to rekindle that feud to take that fade and Creed. Oh.
Yeah.
I thought
that was
going to
be interesting.
I thought we were waiting for the rematch.
The old man slobber knocker. Yeah. Yeah, that would be interesting. Definitely entertaining for sure. But there's so many stories to tell. They can do that. They can continue on the path they are. But it's a lot of stories to tell. Yeah.
Well, they ain't gonna make it past three rounds.
A lot of great inspirational stories to tell.
Now,
yeah.
we can't leave the ladies out in terms of the love we have for the boxing movies. Shout out to Clint Eastwood and Hilary Swank for what they did with Million Dollar Baby. What was your opinion of that movie?
Ooh, that movie was heavy. That movie was heavy.
Girl,
at the
end of it, oh my God. Ooh.
That movie was really, really heavy. That wasn't a movie that I would watch again and again. I saw it and I was moved by it. You'll have a lot of old school coaches that'll be like, I don't train women and I don't deal with girls, and you know what I'm saying, even to this day, but they'll take a chance on one of them and fall in love, like what Clint Eastwood did. And that story was real. The movie was heavy for me. It wasn't like something I wanted to continue to watch over and over. Let me say that.
Right.
That
ending was hard. I mean, when she hits her head on that stool and she's I'm like, I mean, that was enough for me. I was like, that's one of the movies I could only watch one time. I can only watch it one time.
Yeah.
You know, because you see
and
how
I actually was, it tells the story. That definitely has happened, you know, maybe not exactly like what happened in Million Dollar Baby, but it's those fighters who don't make it out. Are paralyzed, that are their lives are forever changed, if not dead in the ring. So those things are definitely a possibility. And that's the super dark side of boxing. And guess what? They might step in the ring and they might not step out alive, or their lives might be changed forever because of it. So it was real, and it was real heavy. It was real heavy.
It was.
It's a good story though, but whew, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, one of them will hit you in the chest.
But that's something where people have the romanticized view. Like, we go back earlier talking about with Jake Paul, because you schooled me on something, Cincy. I didn't know that the Paul brothers really had a lifelong love of boxing like they did. When I saw Nate Robinson, you know, the former basketball player, when they did that fight and Nate got knocked the fuck out, I was I knew a little bit about the Paul brothers, that they were pretty good with their hands, and Nate thought that this was some rinky-dink shit. I'm like, Nate, you're an NBA player. Those guys were trained to fight.
Yeah.
Even an amateur at that level, like those guys are, to a degree. Because the difference, a lot of people look, when you look at the semantics of amateur and pro, amateur means you're still a beginner, where the semantics of pro means you're good enough to get paid for what you are doing. You know, that's the discernment in terms of it. But when you're looking at it in terms of how also too, now the Paul brothers, on an average, if somebody runs up on them, the Paul brothers could probably put them down because they're trained in terms of using their hands. Now they trained at the same level as, you know, Gennady Golovkin or Juan Markell, Canelo Alvarez? No. Because we've seen those guys fight.
Never.
We've seen them get danged.
Right. Yeah.
But the average person.
And Canelo.
You know. Go ahead.
I was about to say, Canelo's been training since he's been a little bitty boy. So, no. They couldn't catch up to Canelo in this lifetime.
No. Nah.
They just started. You know what I mean?
I mean,
the Mexican fighters, there's something in them that don't stop. They don't stop. I don't know what is going on in the water down there, but they got a style that just don't quit. And more than likely, they've been training since they've been little kids, and it shows. It definitely shows. I take my hat off to the Paul brothers, and they do love boxing, but they don't have, like you said, in comparison to the guys you named, they couldn't reach that level, not in the short window that they have, you know,
to actually fight
as grown-ups, you know what I mean? So it's something that is, you know, people that reach the level of a Canelo or Marquez and all those guys, like, they've been doing it for a very, very, very long time. So it's different. It's really different. But the Paul brothers, they gonna get the average dude up out of there. And even some, and you mentioned Nate Robinson, and he's a great athlete in his own respect in basketball. But him training for a couple of months or 3 months or 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, no, it still wouldn't be enough to get out a trained boxer. It still wouldn't be enough. You know, a lot of people kind of take that for granted because they already are athletic and they athletes, but you haven't been trained in this. So it's different.
It's like, man, this is such a dope conversation. I'm loving we're doing this because we are talking. We crossed so many elements of sports into this conversation. It's like with a lot of the playground ballers on the playground. Athletically, they are great, but then there's a question about, because some of them play in the NBA. And we've seen a couple of playground legends like Marbury and Ray Ferraulston and all those guys make it to the league, you know, who are playground legends, of course. But the reality is, the thing about it with a lot of the playground ballers is that the playground game is based on a one-on-one aesthetic. It's not where an NBA game is based on a team principle. A lot of those those playground guys are great one-on-one guys. But, when you're talking about you have to actually play a team game in terms of understanding, you know, your defensive reads, knowing where your guy's going to be at on the cut, you know, you can't have it just – it's just you and you're just going to try to – burn this guy, you know, because this I'm getting a little ahead of myself, getting excited, but I just, you know, but it's like, just what people got to understand about this, that you're playing against guys, you know, shout out to, even with his craziness at times, Kyrie Irving, when ESPN did the And One special, the And One documentary years ago, And Kyrie was talking about how a lot of these guys who think that they can play an NBA or playground ballers, no, you can't. And Kyrie's arguably the greatest ball handler I have ever seen play the game. That includes Iverson. That includes Magic Johnson. That includes Marbury. Some of the handles that I have seen with Kyrie Irving and some of the stuff I've seen him do in the game in terms of dribbling is just unreal. Like Kyrie said, you know, like Lou Williams was saying, you know, Lou Williams, I think, said in that documentary, like, we grow up playing this, playing basketball. We play when we don't even feel like playing. You know, in terms of when we came up in AAU and all that, you know, we played when we didn't even feel like going out there and playing. So it is not the same thing in terms of that discipline, in terms of understanding. And, you know, the level of competitiveness that it takes in terms of the discipline to keep your body right. That means slow down on smoking the blunt, you know, slow down on the drinking. Because they talked about that in the documentary on ESPN about, you know, how they would drink, you know, how they would, you know, puff on the live before they actually got to playing. And we're not here to say don't smoke weed or nothing. We're not against that. But when you are a athlete, you do have to take care of your body. That is important. You know, that is very important in terms of how you, you know, and, you know, you cannot, you know, like I said earlier, you know, like we were talking about Mayweather. Mayweather, when that dude is locked in to go for go time, that dude is focused. You are not, and he doesn't, smoke or drink. You know, he does not smoke or drink. You know, Bernard Hopkins did not smoke or drink. He would talk about some of the bottles he got from winning those championships. He's never opened them because he doesn't drink. You know, so you have to understand, especially in that profession, how you have to maintain your body to go 12 rounds, to get hit, to move around. Boxing is one of the sports where you cannot stop moving at any point because you can catch one. And like, you know, being out there, you don't see a, and you can get Mike caught a drive-by, you catch a stray because you ain't see that shot coming. You know, somebody is still except this is a, especially, but the thing is, this ain't a drive-by, this is a walk-up. And you're going to catch that shot if you're not careful.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, that speaks to the discipline of the athlete, like to stay, you know, you always hear if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. So, you know, if you got to go lose weight versus on working on skills in the camp, it's different for you. So, but if you, if you've been training and you've been keeping yourself sharp, you, you know, you'll have a better outcome. So it speaks to, Floyd is a great example of just having just unbelievable discipline and just staying ready at all times. So it's different. It's a mindset across all sports. So if you don't have that discipline, it'll show up. It'll show up. If you do, it'll show up. So just, you know, if you're something that you really want, just stay in it and stay focused and stay locked in, because your opportunity will come up, and will you be ready for it, or do you got to get ready for it? So it's a difference in that.
For our audience, Cincy, usually from what you've seen and from your experience in training and then watching other heavyweight champions train, how long is it usually in terms of the average training for a boxer before a fight?
For amateur or professional? Or both?
Both.
Okay. For amateurs, like I'm in Georgia, like Georgia have they've sent out their schedule for fights that are happening around Georgia. So it's the it can be every week, it could be every other week, it could be once a month. So they just have to just stay, I would say, training at least 4 or 5 times a week. They have to run outside of the gym at least 3 times a week or more. But you don't want to overtrain. But as they get closer to the fight date, then they'll start having more and more sparring sessions. And it's up to the coach to determine, you know, how often and when a fighter reaches his peak. And, you know, it's just a lot of coordination involved in that and just a lot of dedication to it. But professional fighters generally have a 6 to 8 week camp before a fight, and because they might go longer in between fights is where the focus can lack and the discipline can lack, and some people lose or will gain weight in between fights, and some people will stay in shape in between fights. So it's, once again, it goes back to a mindset. So it's different for amateurs. I feel like they can be more hungry for it because you'll get to a fight, you don't really know if you're going to have a fight until you get into the ring. You know, things, fighters fall out. Nobody's getting paid for this stuff. Like you might, your match might, something might happen and you might not even have a match. You know what I mean? So it's kind of different for them, but people that are getting paid for it, they know. And It's generally like a 6 to 8 week camp. Some guys end up picking up fights, you know, 2-3 weeks out, and that speaks to them just being ready for the opportunity. So it is different. Amateurs, depending on their coaching and depending on how everything lined up, they tend to fight more often. Shorter rounds. I mean, the shorter fights, it's only three minute rounds or two 3 minute rounds or something like that. So it's different in that aspect, but for professionals, it's their job, so they have to stay in shape in between those fights to really get to the level of a world class fighter.
So, now we know that. Yeah, we know this.
Once again, mindset.
Oh, go ahead.
It's just mindset. All mindset.
Now, we also know that,
it's just mindset.
Mm-hmm. Now, we also know there's two types of training as well, where there's speed training in terms of the agility, like with hitting the peanut bag and the jump roping, and then there's, which is usually for the endurance, and then the heavy bag for the punching bag and all that, and the medicine ball, which is primarily for knockouts. You have your strength training and your speed training, and depending on the type of fighter, you're going to do one or the other. You know, you may do the punch, you may do the heavy training if you're going for the knockout, or you may do the speed training if you're trying to go for endurance and winning. How do you determine from that? How do you determine in terms of going to a fight which training is probably best for the fighter going in?
Generally, the fighters have like a style that they fight. Like everybody's bodies move differently. You know, you got some people that are, you know, power punchers, and you got some people that are pure boxers that are very agile and a lot of footwork, a lot of movement. I think a good coach would have a mixture of both, because you want to be able to stand and punch, and you also want to be able to get up and move. But the fighter is going to express himself based on his style of fighting. So if they get a good mix of of course the coach is going to curtail it to their style. It just depends on just the chemistry of the fighter and the coaching team. How much of it they give of both. So, but, you know, I know y'all done heard styles make fights, so everybody kind of has a style of fighting. You know what I mean? So it's just different for these different personalities and different expressions of boxing.
Now, when you talk about training, Cincy, one of the most infamous upsets ever in the history of boxing, 1990, Tokyo, Japan, Buster Douglas knocks out Mike Tyson. And at this time, Mike Tyson was on the boxing world. and there was a lot of rumors about Mike, you know, did a lot of bumping and grinding before the fight, you know, and obviously we all been there as men, you know, when you let off a couple shots that way, your legs get weak. But it also went to a bigger issue because they were saying that Mike just didn't really train for that fight because he didn't think Buster really had anything for him. And Buster snuck up on him and caught him. You know, how important is it to not underestimate your opponent when you go in the ring?
I can't express how, you know, the importance of not taking anybody for granted, not looking past anybody, because Buster Douglas shocked the world that night. And he had a whole chip on his shoulder. His mama had just passed away. You know, Mike was out partying and doing what he was doing, so you can't ever feel like, even if you are the greatest, you just can't be looking past anybody that's in front of you. It don't matter what their body look like. None of that stuff matters, right? It's your job to go in there and get them out of there and let them know that you are the best. So if you look past people and you take stuff for granted, things like that will happen for sure. You know, but if Mike was locked in and all those other instances of that, if they was locked into it, it might have been a different outcome. You know, but not training for a fight, that's the worst. That's the worst decision you could ever make. You know, but it's you can't judge anybody. You just got to go in there and act like you the underdog every single time, whether you are or not. So,
man, look how many
your mind.
Look how many knockouts have we seen in situations we didn't expect? I remember what I think was it 19 was it King 1997, 1998 when Costa Zou fought Zab Judah. And I've seen to see Costa Zou actually fight, because I've seen footage of him, but I've never seen Zou actually, like, in an actual, man, the way he put down Zab, because Zab had a name at that time. You know, Zab was doing his thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Zab was good. But, I mean, he got in that ring with Zou, and Costa put him down. I was like, whoa.
Man, quickly, too. Yeah. So if he didn't have the right mindset and didn't come prepared, that's what happened. Even for the best of them, you know, Zab definitely had a name for himself. He had some of the quickest hands in boxing. Mm-hmm. But once again, if you stay prepared, you won't have to get prepared. But it's hard when it's a lot of money. It's hard when it's a lot of women. It's hard when there's a lot of temptation. That's hard. So they fighting a lot of different forces outside of the ring, too.
When you look at some of the legendary trainers like Emmanuel Stewart, rest in peace, of course, the work he did with Lennox Lewis, you know, of course, when him and Mike Tyson fought in 2002 and Lennox outboxed him. You know, because I think that was a fight that we really saw how great Lennox really was, you know, in terms of shout to Brixton over in London, you know, where he's from. You know, he really showed everybody that, like, he really, really had those skills. And a lot of people didn't really respect Lennox in terms of it. But, you know, he went in that ring with Mike, you know, and he did what he did, you know. You know, Mike, who can forget that infamous press conference? Mike would talk his shit. Like, Mike, we love Mike, and we know you do. Mike said, I'm a murderizer. I'm going to eat his children. I'm like, man, look, Lennox was just so calm. He said, I give you some. I'm going to give Mike something to eat and put up his fist. I was like, he could eat these. I was like, a lot of times, you know, King and Cincy, we see fights a lot of times that they got to sell it. You know, a lot of those guys, there's we see rivals. I mean, we've seen what happened with Vargas and whatchamacallit, what's his name?
Vargas,
you know,
and what's the guy
they
on, Mayorga?
Yeah, Mayorga. We saw, who was that fight that De La Hoya had? What was it, who was that dude? Because that was the first time watching that fight with De La Hoya. I knew that this. Yeah, because he was trying to call De La Hoya.
That dude was
a real Mexican, and that joint got heavy. I mean, like, I knew, I watched fights with De La Hoya, but what he did to Ricardo Mayorga, I was like, yo,
that man violated in the front of his family, in front of his daughter and his wife, man. He had
to fight. I mean, boy, that beating that De La Hoya put on him, I was looking at this fight. I'm like, yo, this shit is personal. This is personal.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, I thought I saw for a couple of snippets. I saw De La Hoya get angry with some of them punches. I was like, I'm like, look, y'all, you done pissed that brown brother off, man. It's like you about to catch it,
man.
You're gonna act like this dude was not an Olympic gold medal champion in boxing. I'm like, look, De La Hoya may have had, you know, he was the golden boy in terms of considering the image mm-hmm. that he had cultivated and everything. That it's like, I'm like, y'all niggas got this shit fucked up. That essay about the woman, and he did. Ooh.
Well,
after I saw that fight,
you can't underestimate anybody.
Yeah, but I'm like, you can't be talking about that name like that.
Mayorga was so disrespectful, and he didn't care, and he ended up getting whooped for it.
Man, that
ended up getting whooped.
What was that fake dude, man? Last time I heard about that, it was last night. It wasn't him. It was Trinidad. He was scrambling looking for $30 million that he stole from stolen by Don King. So I don't know if it was the same thing with Mayorga. I ain't seen or heard of him from Mayorga in a while.
No, me either.
But you know, y'all, we look at that era of boxing when we had Prince Nassim Hamid, we had Ike Corte, we had Felix Trinidad, we had Fernando Vargas,
mm-hmm.
you know, Jimmy Garcia, Johnny Tapia. I mean, you had a prime Roy Jones Jr., Antonio Tarver. I mean, that was a great – oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was.
We were spoiled.
They were lifting it up.
We were spoiled
mm-hmm.
in that era.
Yeah, nobody was ducking. Nobody was
that
ducking.
That was what that was the 90s or 2000s?
That was the 90s. That was like the mid-90s and going into the 90s,
yeah. Definitely was a great era in boxing, yeah. It can be like that, too, but the guys, they have to fight each other. They have to. You know, they have to mix it up with each other. Otherwise, it'll be like you coasting and just cherry, as they say, cherry picking. So it can be like that. But it definitely was about a great fight in the 90s. So we were heavyweight
yeah.
and...
Yeah, they slick politics. They kind of learned from Floyd. They kind of learned from Floyd how to pick them now. They wait for a nigga to get washed in a fight. And when he lose all his confidence, they'd be like, yo, sign him up, man. We want to fight him now. Like, you ain't want to fight him when he was whooping
yeah.
ass. Now he get dropped.
Right.
Lose all his confidence, lose his belt, lose his woman, lose his kid, and now y'all want to, now you want to fight.
Right. He right for the picking, man.
Yeah.
You know, I know the Pacquiao Mayweather fight took so long to happen. Because I've seen, like, old footage
mm-hmm.
of Pacquiao, like, you know, like, years before they actually got it on. But Pacquiao, his prime, boy, Pacquiao was
And y'all know Pacquiao want to come back, right? Pacquiao want to come back and fight Tank.
No, man. That fighter in him is still want to go, but I think he should just enjoy retirement. You know, for Tank knock him out the ring. I'm not saying he would, but he could. You know, so he just
Pacquiao doing it for the sport.
Is undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Father Time is definitely undefeated. So, yeah. So that's a huge factor is his age and things like that. Not saying it can't be done, but we see what happens when they, you know, he been out for a while and he has gotten older. So
I don't know about Pat coming back. I don't know.
Maybe not, though.
But, you know, some people still think about that situation in 1994 with George Foreman when he beat Michael Moore for the world title. And George
yeah.
Moore was, 45. He was 45 years old when he came
45.
Back and beat Michael Moore.
Yeah.
You know, and that was just crazy to see. You know, I remember watching it when he put him
yeah.
down. And, you know, he was the oldest heavyweight ever to win.
Yeah.
But, you know, but that means George, it was just something to see him, you know, because George came full circle because he was one of the villains of boxing back in the day, you know, in terms of just,
mm-hmm.
You know, dude from Texas and Cordova,
man.
You know, and
you know, but George really became a beloved figure. And, I mean, to see him do what he did winning that, you know, title, you got to think about who was going during that time. You know, you had Lennox Lewis, Riddick Bowe, Michael Moore, all those guys. I mean, John Ruiz, who Roy Jones beat for the – I think Roy Jones is the only middleweight to ever beat a heavyweight. You know, when John Ruiz had the world belt and they were Roy Jones beat him for the belt. I mean, you had guys like Shannon Briggs during that time. I mean, it was just a time, man. It was a whole vibe back in the day.
It was. It really was. It really was. Yeah. And just a lot of great fights. A lot of great fighters. So they was mixing it up and staying busy. You know, this was about a legacy, man. Money will come with the legacy, though. So, you know, they just got to stay, you know, keep that same mindset of just going there and dogging people out. You know, that's your job.
Yeah.
Shannon Briggs, I love his energy, you know, even to this day. So,
yeah.
But it can get there. I keep saying that. It can get there. It can get there again.
We still want to see Shannon Briggs and Rampage Jackson. We've been waiting for that for 10 years now.
You think it's going to happen?
I hope it do. We need some fuckers. I mean, we know the fight going to be trash, but I'm talking about the promo with it to the fight. That's going to be where the comedy is.
Oh, yeah. That's where the comedy is. Especially
we know the fight going to be trash.
Yeah.
I ain't put no faith in that.
100%.
So we know the fight's going to be garbage. Everybody's going to be slow. They're going to be sucking wind after the second round. So we're going to be like, okay, at least we're going to get some good, you know, back and forth.
How old are those guys now, y'all? Because they got to be in like, they got to be almost 60 now. Well, I know with Briggs got to be almost, in his, at least his mid-50s.
Rampage is 45.
Okay, yeah, so Rampage my age. He's 45. I know with Briggs is way older than him.
Yeah, he got to be, early 50s, mid-50s, something like that.
Yeah.
It would be interesting, though. I'm sure they would have a lot of stipulations if they did fight, like not to knock each other out, but who knows. Like how Mike Tyson and Roy Jones, it was entertaining, but
they got to do one thing.
Nobody
want to
see
nobody
get hurt.
They got to put Snoop on commentary for that.
Man,
yeah, 100%, 100%, 100%.
Shout out to Uncle Snoop, man. You know, rapper, weed connoisseur, hip hop icon. And hilarious commentator. Yeah. I did not know Uncle Snoop was that funny. I mean, his boxing commentary is gold. They need to book that man for every fight out there. Because Snoop, I mean, is a boxing connoisseur. Is a boxing connoisseur, Cincy. What was your reaction when you heard Snoop call a fight?
I was entertained by it. I knew it was an exhibition fight, and they probably made sure that those guys didn't go in there and kill each other and hurt each other, because I felt like Mike Tyson was holding something back. But made it an all-around event, like just an all-around entertainment. And it is room in boxing for those types of exhibition fights that are out of the box. And, you know, everybody's getting paid to put on the show. So I don't see, you know, and if they continue to do those things, they definitely should have Snoop time to take.
Man, Uncle Snoop.
100%. He's the guy for that.
Yeah. I mean, Snoop was just, that was just hilarious. Recently, since the HBO and Showtime said they were ending their boxing programming, what is your feeling about that?
I always loved the production of what HBO did. Showtime was definitely showcasing a lot of young fighters and up and coming fighters. I felt like, you know, fighters. I feel like the PBC not allowing their fighters to fight the best guys, it kind of killed what Showtime had going on as far as pay per view, because people didn't want to pay for mediocre fights, and
right. They
were able to get away with it for so long, but eventually it ended up, you know, they end up not being able to cover the costs for putting on the fight and you know, try to get the people to pay for it through pay-per-view. And nobody wants to pay $80 for a fight that you know who is going to win. You know what I mean? Like, that's no fun in that. So you feel like they just taking my money. You know what I mean? So if they get back to the fighters fighting the best, you can charge whatever it is for pay-per-view. Otherwise, they're going to stream it. They're going to find a way to watch it and get around paying those things. And that type of stuff has killed Showtime. HBO, I think, might have been in a different situation, but it's unfortunate, though, because now they're trying to find different platforms. And, you know, you got the Zone out there. But, I mean, and that's just the future of just having the app to stream different sports. But I really love what HBO did for boxing, and it's sad to see Showtime end this way, too. Just the end of an era in boxing. It can, you know, change into something else. Hopefully it does. And I'm sure they'll figure out a way to continue to show fights and, you know, and to move along with the times. But it's definitely an end of an era.
Yeah, you know, when we think about
it's unfortunate.
That was nostalgia for us growing up because, you know, we grew up watching all this stuff. As we get older, seeing where we're at now in our lives, you know, being in our 40s, you know, we really, really look back fondly, and we really, really look back with appreciation how much we really had it good in terms of some of the programming we had, to see some of the fights we did, the television shows that we saw, you know, the hip-hop we listened to. You know, it was something that I was on YouTube the other day, and God bless the person that did this. They actually were uploading whole video clips of the Rap City episodes from, like, the 90s, like the whole show. And I was like, man, you know, when you see even the commercials, the nostalgia comes, and even some of boxers. And it's like, yo, it's like we really were living in the best times, and we didn't even know it.
Because it's different now.
And we were in the moment.
Even for rap, the hip-hop is different. You know, so sign of the times, and, you know, people being people. But like you said, just it was a lot of nostalgia, and it was a great era of music and boxing, sports. You know, Michael Jordan was around that time too, right? All of that stuff.
Yeah. Now, you being from Ohio, there are some rap legends from there. Shout out to Uncle Tash from Alkoholics. And, of course, Bone Thugs and Harmony, you know. How has hip-hop inspired you growing up? What is it? Is it a staple in your training regimen for what you do personally and for what you do with your trainees?
It is. Boxing is all about rhythm. So, for me, I like to train. I like to have rhythmic stuff. So sometimes the current hip hop, I can't find the rhythm in it. And it could be the beat. It could be how they ride in the beat. It could be all of those things. So different sessions, depending on who I'm training. And I know for me personally, I just like the rhythm to be simple and plain and, you know, but I tend to prefer like old school hip hop. I ain't gonna lie. Just because of the simplicity in it, you know, you can hear the rhythm, you can hear what they're saying, they're telling a story versus like today, it's kind of like, huh? You know, like, well, where to beat at? You know, you jump a rope, you want to have a rhythm. It's a rhythm you want to establish, you know, so.
It's important. It's definitely important. And it's, you know, because the rhythm got to be there.
If you can't feel the rhythm, then it's hard to you know, teach the move or even get the move. So it's important. It's important. It's different now, but it is what it is. Hip-hop is, I think, a staple for any, you know, any person that's part of the, you know, the black community. So I don't necessarily like where it's headed and where it's going, but you can't go back to the archives and pick out those, you know, those great lyricists and rhythms and beats, you know, and still enjoy it. So
it's but it's also relative because I think you always look at the architects that made it great, just like you look at the architects of boxing that made it legendary. Mm-hmm. When you, as a trainer, as a fan, what were your three favorite fights in the history of boxing from any era?
Let me think about that. My mind immediately went to Sugar Ray Robinson.
Okay.
I can't think of guys. He fought one guy maybe like six times. I don't know why his name is not,
that's not Floyd
coming
Patton.
To my mind. Not, that was a good fight, too. That was a great fight, too. Anything in relation to Sugar Ray Robinson. Mm-hmm. Anything in relation to Sugar Ray Robinson. Yes. I really enjoyed the Muhammad Ali. I watched those fights recently in Frazier. They went toe for toe, blow for blow. Somebody lost, somebody won. He came back and won. And currently, just because it's just at the top of my mind, I really like Terrence Crawford, and I like what he did. And he, the first guy to become undisputed in a four belt era. So I don't see that being like a great trilogy, but that fight currently, for sure. But yeah, anything related to Sugar Ray Robinson, he just, I feel like one of the greatest to lace up a pair of gloves. So anything you pick up from him is good boxing. And but of course I enjoy Mike Tyson and, like you said, that whole 90s era of boxing. But Muhammad Ali was like a bigger Sugar Ray Robinson in his style of fighting. And I feel like now Terrence Crawford is like a complete boxer. Can fight from both sides. And
yeah.
He's just a throwback fighter.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was thinking Brown Bomber. I'm thinking of Joe Louis. But, of course, Sugar Ray Robinson also had that designation, just being nice with his hands, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at the significance of boxing, y'all, coming to America, thank you, Eddie Murphy, our city hall, for coming up with the greatest comedy box routine live ever in the history of comedy. Who would even think to use boxers as one of the most iconic comedy dialogues in the history of film? Say, you must have got your goddamn mind.
Yeah.
The way Eddie came in with that delivery, you knew it was going to be hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Man, but Eddie, you know, because he doubles up as a Jew, as a Jewish dude, he's like, Ezekiel Lewis is there.
Yep.
Then it goes, you know, he's looking around there. Fuck you. Who's that?
Definitely a classic you can watch over and over and over.
The thing is, the way that they mix facts in with hilarious comedy excessiveness, I mean, that was just, you know,
it was a great
mixture. When they talked about Rocky Marciano.
Yeah.
before we go, I got to say this. One of the most memorable press conferences I ever seen was when Larry Holmes was just going off on the Great White Hope. Larry, that was top five trash talking promos ever.
Ooh.
I'm a matter of fact, I'm gonna post that on my Instagram. I'm gonna tag you all, both of y'all, after the show, man, because that's legendary,
okay.
Right? He said Rocky Marciano couldn't hold my jock strap.
Them fighting words right there, boy. Them fighting words.
You know, Larry was talking that ish, yo. I was like, yo, man, that humbleness left quick. He had that old buck, he had that OG snapback too. So I was like, yo, we get some OG tails with this.
Larry Holmes had a great jab.
Yeah.
He was a great fighter too, you know. But he that's how he felt in that moment, and he was gonna go back it up. So,
I mean, the press conferences were something else to see back in the day. They were just
Larry Holmes was a real one, man. I mean, we give him crap for the Tupac line, Larry Holmes, Flabby and Sick, which is iconic. But come on, man, Larry was a real one. I mean, how many boxers drop kick niggas off a car?
Oh man, that's definitely something that if people haven't seen, they need to go back and watch. That whole lead up to that fight, gee whiz.
Oh my goodness, they were just not playing in that era. But oh my god, it was just different back then.
It was
like as King said, we're getting to wind it down. Cincy, oh my God, this has been so entertaining, so enlightening, so educational. We've enjoyed you, and we need to have you back on soon. We really enjoyed having, and you gave us so many jewels about it. There's a lot of, and our listeners as well, that they might not understand. Before we get out of here, shamelessly promote everything that you got going on in terms of where everybody can find you, your organization, you know, everything in terms of what you do.
Well, if you're ever in Atlanta, Georgia, you can find me at A Fighter for Life Boxing and Fitness. That's where I'm at 6 days a week training, and I'm also still getting trained myself. On Instagram, I'm at CincyKid7. We also have a nonprofit organization that has initiatives for the homeless people of Atlanta or the people without homes in Atlanta. It also sponsors our boxing team. I'm still down for the cause for boxing for people living with Parkinson's disease. I'm currently working on a program for a boxing program for children with autism. So it's a lot of things in the works. We in the community as well as in the gym. You can find me if you want. The address is 1897 Metropolitan Parkway. We're in the heart of Atlanta, Georgia. We on the grind, and it's a family-based organization. Even if people don't come train, we still have events where we want people to come socialize with us, and we want them to come and help us serve the homeless community. So it's just a lot of things, a lot of pots on the stove, but it keeps us grounded. It keeps us humble. And that's how we train our fighters. And, you know, that's how we plan on continuing on to do the work, you know, in the ring and outside. Because it's way more than boxing. You know, it's a lot. Boxing is a vehicle that allows us to touch all these other people, too. So whether they fighters or fitness and, you know, all these other things, you know, if you want to come and meet a great group of people, you know, come stop by and come see us. We there, you know, every day, pretty much, 6 days a week. So definitely
Y'all heard
a fighter for life. Boxing and fitness is where you can find me. I'm sorry.
Y'all heard it. It's okay. Y'all heard it right here on Off the Cuff Radio. Cincy Kid, Ms. Maria, thank you again so much. We really appreciate your time, your thoughts, and your academia in all levels, man. This has been tremendous.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. It was my pleasure. Trust me, it was my pleasure. I enjoyed it, too.
Absolutely. So we got to get that part two in and talk about more of the boxing history and some of the hijinks outside of Larry, outside of people getting drop kick off cars. We didn't even get to talk about Mike Tyson and Mitch Green.
No, man, that's classic.
Boy, we got
classic boxing.
We got to save that for part two.
Okay.
Thank you again.
You're welcome.
And we'll definitely be supporting, as always. And King, you know, take us out.
Thank you guys for having me. It's been definitely been my pleasure speaking with
you
tonight.
You're very welcome.
And
you're very
welcome. If you're in Atlanta, come see me in person for sure. I will be there. I will be there. So, yeah. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, another chapter in the illustrious history of Off the Cuff Radio with Cincy Kid, Ms. Maria. We thank you for your time and you taking your time out to listen to us. And we will see y'all next trip out on the airways. And on that note, good night and blessings to everybody. Peace.